I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
Americans need help.
There's no other way to say it. We are overwhelmed.
On the COVID front, infections spiking, hospitalizations increasing in many parts of the country. How some states and cities are doing in the battle against COVID-19. Businesses hurting. People struggling. Stimulus talks stalled. Can financially strapped Americans trust the government to deliver the relief they so desperately need? Next in line, Vice President Pence, Senator Kamala Harris. Face off in the first and only VP debate. What to expect and how the night could impact the election. Plus, boarded up and seeking shelter. Hurricane Delta slams into Mexico and heads our way. Tonight, tracking the storm as it barrels toward a battered Gulf Coast.
Good evening again. Tonight, our nation is at an impasse. Many of us and those who lead us are dug in on how to tackle the coronavirus, how to shore up the lives and livelihoods of those caught in the COVID crosshairs. The infection rate is climbing rapidly. That is not in dispute. But we as a nation are at odds about how exactly to live with it, how to fight and where to fold as we stare down the killer among us, and what to do about the money that tens of millions of Americans desperately need. Stimulus talks are stalled, and many who suffer wonder right now if help is coming at all as our leaders play political poker at the sky's the limit table with the election just 27 days away. We begin tonight on COVID Watch. The numbers of positive test results increased in 39 states over the past week. There have been record high hospitalizations in the Midwest. Nationwide, we're seeing nearly 44,000 new confirmed cases every day on average and increasing steadily over the past month. In Wisconsin, the governor calls the situation dire. Some hospitals there overwhelmed. It's getting so bad in Wisconsin, they're opening an emergency field hospital to try and deal with the overflow. Our COVID coverage begins there. Gabe Gutierrez in the hard-hit city of Green Bay. Gabe.
Shep, doctors here say the situation is getting increasingly dire. I'm outside Lambeau Field, where this week the Green Bay Packers announced that they will no longer allow fans until further notice here at this iconic stadium. But the real story is the dramatic increase in COVID cases and hospitalizations. This we saw video today from inside one of the local hospitals here, St. Mary's, where doctors and nurses are battling this crisis. About a month ago, there were some 800 or so COVID cases daily in Wisconsin. Now that number is above 2,300. And as you mentioned, Shep, today the governor announced that he was activating a field hospital at the state fairgrounds near Milwaukee. We spoke with one of the doctors at the center of this crisis today. This is the picture he painted.
The situation in Wisconsin, best way I can describe it, it's awful. From the number of patients turning positive every day compared to the number we're testing, to what's actually happening inside of our hospitals, we're admitting more and more people that have COVID-19, and what that's doing, it's causing the whole system to somewhat almost get on the verge of collapse, because then we can't take care of everybody else.
On the verge of collapse, Chef, that doctor says that some of the major hospitals here are one bed away from reaching their capacity. And tomorrow, Chef, here in Wisconsin, a new order from the governor takes effect, mandating that businesses and indoor gatherings are capped at 25%. But as you know, this is creating a lot of controversy here. Just several months ago, the state Supreme Court agreed with Republican lawmakers and struck down the governor's stay-at-home order. Many business owners here and Trump supporters also say that any type of shutdown will be disastrous for this state's economy, Shep.
Gabe, months ago in New York, worried about bed space and ventilators and across the country, really. What's the biggest concern in Wisconsin?
Well, Shep, ventilators here aren't the problem, according to the doctors we spoke with. And bed space is a concern, but the real issue they're having with is staffing. There's a concern if any of the doctors and nurses get sick, it'd be tough to replace them. And so, Shep, you'll recall several months ago, it was doctors and nurses from across the country going to New York City. Now, doctors and nurses and health professionals here in Wisconsin are asking for help to beef up staffing as they deal with this crisis, Shep.
Gabe, thanks. So in the Midwest, big concern. Now areas in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic quickly becoming hotspots of their own. In Delaware, cases on the average are up 21% this week over last. In New Jersey, highest case numbers in 4 months. In Pennsylvania, the highest in 5 months. In Connecticut, another surge. Average daily cases up 64% over just last week. But that state's still marching on with reopening. Phase 3 starts tomorrow in Connecticut. That means restaurants, libraries, hair salons, all of it can now operate indoors at 75% of capacity, though bars and nightclubs remain closed. And New York City targeting 9 specific zip codes in Brooklyn and Queens, where cases are rising so fast. All schools in those areas now closed. And protests erupted last night in a Brooklyn neighborhood that's home to a large ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. Hundreds of people marching through the streets, some setting masks on fire, furious with the governor and the mayor for new restrictions. And they're not alone. Frank Holland now with a different set of demands being made by frontline workers in the big city.
We're very nervous and anxious.
Jane Gorenzker is a nurse in suburban New York City. She says the rise in hotspots just underscores the need for healthcare workers to have all the PPE, staff, and resources they need.
We will be the warriors. We will be the frontline soldiers, boots on the ground. That's not a problem. We will do it. But we need the resources. And there's the fear of going home and bringing it back to people that I love. There's fear of getting sick myself.
What do we want? What do we want?
Frontline workers rallying in New York City today, pushing for a proposed state law that would mandate those workplace protections.
Having the hospitals and having the employers enforce guidance is like having the fox watch the chicken coop. We need enforceable standards with clear guidelines.
The governor says he's protecting the public by ordering the closure of non-essential businesses in the most severe hotspots on Thursday.
Some people are unhappy. I understand it. These limitations are better than going back to close down, which is what happens when the infection increases.
Times like these, I feel like flowers are essential.
Beautiful bouquets more popular than ever during these ugly days of the pandemic at this family flower shop in Brooklyn.
All these bright colors.
Constantine Velios hopes the closures help to slow the virus, but knows they will hurt many New Yorkers.
By closing my business, you know, I can't give my employees the money that they deserve. In turn, they can't feed their families. In turn, they can't pay their bills.
And small business owners here in this hotspot tell me the uncertainty is another major issue. They don't know for sure when they can reopen. They don't know if all their employees will come back. And most importantly, they don't know if their customers will return. Many already facing stiff competition from big box stores that will remain open while they're closed. Shep?
Frank, the president left the White House residence today, returned to the Oval Office this afternoon, and just posted a 5-minute-long video on Twitter in which he thanked an experimental drug for his improved condition.
I want everybody to be given the same treatment as your president, because I feel great. I feel like perfect.
This video coming at the end of the day where the White House says the president spoke with governors and met with his top aides. CNBC's Kayla Tauchi joins us now. Kayla?
Shep, that 5-minute video came late in the day. It was just one of dozens of tweets that the president posted to Twitter today. After a midday memo from the White House physician saying he's symptom and fever free, he headed to the Oval Office. The tell, as you see right here, was that Marine guard standing outside the West Wing portico, as he does when the president is inside. A senior official tells me that the president entered from the outside so as not to expose other staffers. From there, the president talked to governors about Hurricane Delta. He talked to his Treasury Secretary about economic relief. And he talked to UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who himself fought the virus earlier this year. For anyone meeting the president in person, that's two people. Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, and his top communications advisor, Dan Scavino. There are N95 masks and goggles outside the Oval Office. And I obtained the communication to White House staff sent 5 days after the outbreak began. It says masks are mandatory in the West Wing, but just encouraged elsewhere. Aides must submit to random testing, and anyone testing positive or quarantining because of their exposure must get clearance from the White House medical unit and a negative test before returning to work. Shep?
Kayla, thanks. The money now. On the pandemic's back, the economic crisis facing individual Americans is escalating. If you need government money to pay your bills and feed your family, that money is not coming. Not right away. It can't until Congress acts, the president signs, and the Treasury prints. That's the process. It's slow, and it hasn't even begun. Here's where stimulus or disaster relief stands right now. Yesterday afternoon, President Trump shut down talks between the White House and the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi. Hours later, the president said he was open to piecemeal fixes, but not for everyone in need. This morning, Speaker Pelosi talked again with the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, about a bailout for the airlines, something the House already tried to pass last week. And we just learned they had another conversation an hour ago. So where are we now? CNBC's Elon Moy with the negotiations on the stimulus. What about it, Elon?
Well, Chef, that bill that the Treasury Secretary and the Speaker of the House discussed would have given $25 billion to the airlines and extended that help through March. But that legislation went nowhere fast in the House. It was brought up at the last minute, at the end of the legislative day, and Republicans blocked it for procedural reasons. They called it just another political stunt by the Democrats. Now, there is a bipartisan bill in the Senate, two Republicans and two Democrats, that provides the same help for the airlines. And I'm told that after the president tweeted last night, one of the chief sponsors, GOP Senator Roger Wicker, he started polling his colleagues to see if there was any hope of moving this legislation forward. Now, there are also bills in the Senate that would extend the payroll protection program, allowing small businesses to take out a second loan if they need it. And some Republicans have even gotten behind the idea of direct checks, $1,000 a person for adults and for kids. Now, the White House had tried to figure out if it could do any of these moves on its own. It can't, and so that means Congress would have to act. But, Chef, I am told that there is a lot of skepticism on Capitol Hill over the political will to get something done, and there's not a lot of time left to do it before the election.
Back Elon Moy, thanks. Forget corporations for a minute. Think Main Street with me. The company you worked for shut down in COVID. You don't get a paycheck or government relief, so you sure don't go to restaurants. Those restaurants close and fire their workers, then they can't spend around town. That's called a small business death spiral. Here's CNBC's Kate Rogers with one restaurant's dilemma.
Make sure you sanitize the top.
The losses for business owners like San Francisco restaurateur Johnny Matheny are piling up. He already cut his workforce from 80 to 6 across 4 locations and is desperate for financial relief.
I feel betrayed and let down because I keep thinking and believing and knowing we were forced to be shut down by politicians and the government. And for them to decide not to even negotiate to help the country right now, the country of small businesses, which is, I believe, the backbone of the American way.
The numbers are staggering. In the restaurant industry alone, over 8 million workers furloughed or laid off at the height of the pandemic. $165 billion in sales losses from March through July, and 100,000 locations completely closed, according to the National Restaurant Association. A large portion of them expected to become permanent, as the cooler months limit outdoor dining and lawmakers struggle with a stalemate over stimulus spending.
And Matheny certainly isn't alone. The National Federation of Independent Business reports that about half of its small business members that received federal aid say they'll need more help in the next 12 months. And what's worse, about 1 in 5 say they'll have to close their doors for good if economic conditions don't improve in the next 6 months. Chef?
Well, Kate Rogers, thanks. So what's the cost of Washington's failure? Mike Allen's the co-founder of Axios. He's with us. You're plugged in Washington. Let's talk about the fallout here. Who gets the blame when a deal doesn't get done?
Well, Chef, I have new reporting for you from both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. And the blame, rightly, goes mostly to the White House. Republicans control the Senate, so right there, they control 2/3 of the actors. And the president out there in the last 48 hours, making the toxic politics even worse. So you mentioned that phone call recently between the Speaker and the Treasury Secretary. Shep, if there's going to be action, I think we'll know in the next 24 to 48 hours. I'm told that by the time you get to the Supreme Court confirmation hearing next week, sort of everybody's in their corners. It's much less likely. If there could be movement on airline rescue, that would be big. Shep, as you know, you've had such great coverage of that. You've been so close to it for your documentary. 32,000 plus jobs, the airline have said, with some help from Washington, they would bring some of those jobs back. But the other pieces that people are looking for, that extension of unemployment benefits, other things that people are hoping for, very hard to see it happening before the election.
There is no way. I mean, the Senate is out. And once they do come up with a deal, if they ever do, it'll take a while to get the money to people. But surely politicians on both sides of the fence realize people are suffering in a way that is not their fault and that they have to get something done. I heard them say it just 2 days ago.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And what I'm hearing is that there is new pressure from the people who are running in the country, people who are not here but are running in states and districts. Both of them are telling their leaders here, we need a better story to tell. But Shep, the problem is there's just nothing in the bank for either side. A person close to the process described to me the president's tweet the other day. They said it was either deliberate stupidity or just inept politics. Someone else telling Axios, you have to try to mess it up this badly.
Is that fair? Because is that fair, though? Because
they'll tell you the Republicans, this is the president, classic Trump. He's turning over the table so that he can reset the table. I can tell you, Speaker Pelosi in no mood to play table games with President Trump.
Yeah, but you know, but to be fair, isn't it possible that just like Mitch McConnell said, the president looked at the options, said, this isn't going to get done. Let's move on to something that can get done, like a Supreme Court nominee. Like, I can't do this. Let's just move on.
Politics is partly showing that you are trying, showing that you understand that human pain that the news has covered so vividly. And that's the piece that the president is missing. And that's the piece that his party is paying a huge price for up and down the ballot. After the debate last week, Republican who was looking at state by state polling said to me, the bottom is falling out everywhere. And a big part of it had to do with the president's empathy. You talk to the Biden campaign, they will tell you the two of the big moments in that debate, two of the big moments that have really turned the politics in the country, have really given Joe Biden a tailwind, are both having to do with human connection, with empathy. So you had that moment where Joe Biden said, shut up, man. A lot of his voters thinking that way. And then when he's talking about his late son, Beau Biden, the president interrupts. So it's like with the stimulus, you have to show people that you care.
Mike Allen, I got to go. Thanks so much, Mike Allen from Axios. Well, you'll get a chance soon. The first and only vice presidential debate is less than 2 hours away from right now. We're live in Salt Lake City.
Stage set, plexiglass up. The VP face-off tonight in Utah. But what's the state of the election down ballot? Will the balance of power shift in Washington? And America's top spy hunter on election interference.
Is Russia putting out disinformation to help get President Trump elected? And is China actively engaging in a disinformation campaign to help Vice President Biden?
Yeah, they all are.
The message every American should hear. Plus, wrong turn. How a giant sea creature ends up stranded, wandering around this neighborhood.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
The vote now, 27 days till you do it, but early voting already underway in 42 states. We are just 1 hour and, 40 minutes away now from the first and only vice presidential debate. NBC's Jay Gray live in Salt Lake City. What strategies should we expect tonight from the candidates, Jay?
Well, Shep, let's start with Vice President Mike Pence. And what we've heard from analysts and those in the campaign is that he'll likely stick to the company line, that he'll continue to push the issues and ideas that the president has throughout this campaign. He will focus not only on fighting the COVID virus, but also about the economy and bringing jobs back and making sure that people's 401k is still doing well, something that the president has talked about often. He will be doing all that, of course, as he has since becoming vice president, in the footsteps of President Trump. And right now, with President Trump working through the virus, it's something he's going to have to separate himself from a bit here. So it'll be interesting to see how he does that. We don't expect him to be all that volatile, though we do expect him to push back just a bit on some of the issues, perhaps like the environment and other things that are very important to Senator Kamala Harris, who, as a former prosecutor, is expected to come out swinging here, Shep. We expect her to really pull on those same issues, to look at the record of this administration and point out things that she and Joe Biden believe they're just not doing right and continue to mess up here. And so I think you'll see some rigorous back and forth here before it's all over. I don't think that it's going to spin out into the name calling and, frankly, the embarrassment of the presidential debate.
Jay will be watching. Thanks. Got a new batch of polls in the meantime. The former Vice President Joe Biden has extended his lead nationally. Of course, we don't vote nationally. And there are open questions about how this plays out down ballot in local races. Might the Senate flip? Can Democrats keep the House? Steve Kornacki now on what the polls show about the balance of power.
All right, Shep. Well, yeah, down ballot, that becomes an important question, too, because we talk about Joe Biden leading nationally, that lead being high single digits at this point. What does that do for Democrats' hopes? Their dream here is to get Biden president and take back the Senate. They need a net gain of 4 Senate seats and a Biden victory. That would get them there. So take a look here. Here's what you see. The good news for Democrats right now is there are 5 Republican seats, 5 Republican incumbents, where in the polling right now, Democrats lead. That's one of the things that starts happening. With Biden moving to the lead he's got nationally, there's a bit of a trickle-down effect here in some of these states. 5 states where Democrats have the lead in polling. Again, they need a net gain of 4. And then there are a couple of seats that Democrats are eyeing that are on the cusp. How about this one? Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. Polling is tied there. In Montana, the Republican only leading by 1 point. There are a lot of targets, potential targets here for Democrats. And again, their magic number is they probably got to pick off 4 Republican seats. That would probably get it done if Biden gets elected president. Here's the challenge, though, for Democrats. Here's what they're up against. Look at some of these states, Montana, South Carolina, maybe North Carolina, we'll see, maybe Arizona. I'm talking about states that went for Trump in 2016 that could very well go for Trump again in 2020. If Trump ends up winning a bunch of these states, if he can increase his support a little bit between now and Election Day, if he wins a bunch of these seats, does he carry those Republicans across the finish line with him? How is this for a stat? In 2016, last time we had a presidential election, 0 states in the country split their tickets. 0 voted for a White House candidate from one party and a Senate candidate from the other party. It all matched up. Democratic presidential candidate vote, Democratic Senate vote, Republican president, Republican Senate. That partisanship, that polarization, that's a challenge Democrats could be up against, too, in some of those states.
Steve Kornacki, thanks. Hurricane Delta, heavy rains and strong winds in the Yucatan, ravaging popular vacation spots around Cancun, will track its way to the USA. And Louisiana, once again, right in the path. That state's still recovering from that monster storm, Laura. Louisiana's governor will tell us the state of play in the bayou. But first, a new ride for a skateboarding TikTok star as we take a CNBC trip coast to coast. Georgia. A man is suing Gwinnett County, its police department, and 2 officers for $10
million.
Sit down.
It's a crosswalk right there. What did I do?
No crosswalk right there.
What did I do?
Down!
Police tased him last year during a jaywalking arrest. Body camera video shows the cops tased him 3 times before handcuffing him. The man did not put his hands behind his back as police directed. Authorities dropped the jaywalking charges back in November. One of the officers involved resigned while under investigation for a separate incident. Gwinnett County Police say they cannot comment on a pending civil suit. Massachusetts, brunch in a bubble. One restaurant in Boston's Seaport District offering COVID-safe dining with these igloo-like domes.
We've had them full every night.
It's a way for restaurants to stay open for outdoor dining through the winter. Idaho, skateboard, cranberry juice, Fleetwood Mac. All ingredients for a viral TikTok. This man's video blew up, viewed more than 26 million times. So Ocean Spray has jumped in for free publicity, gifting the star a cranberry red pickup truck. And the company's CEO hopped on the skateboard, too. Texas. A classical artist takes his talent to the streets. After art galleries closed for the pandemic, one Fort Worth man started using the city as a canvas. This spray-painted piece in the works is of an Aztec warrior. His elaborate murals aim to celebrate different heritages. And that wraps this CNBC trip coast to coast. There are real questions tonight about whether all you investors and analysts who move the markets understand fully the dysfunction in Washington. The Dow had its best day since July, and that's what's on the money tonight. Ruby Tuesday declares bankruptcy as COVID decimates its sit-down business. The chain to close 185 of its restaurants for good, try to cut enough debt to keep the other locations operating. The company has more than 7,000 employees, and how many are still working? Only 300. And we now know what Crocs was up to with that Justin Bieber photo that made its share price climb. Crocs has officially unveiled its Justin Bieber collaboration. It's a classic clog in yellow with custom Bieber charms and will retail for just $55. A bit of Bieber beneath your feet. On Wall Street, the Dow had a big day, as I mentioned, up 530 points, S&P and NASDAQ up almost 2% each. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour, time for the top of the news. Hurricane Delta entering the Gulf of Mexico today. The storm beat up the Yucatan Peninsula along the way. It dropped from a Cat 4 to a Cat 1 while over land. Early this morning, heavy rain in Playa del Carmen and winds at 100 miles an hour. 911 lit up, people whose windows and doors were broken. Strong winds cutting power from Tulum to Cancun and across the Yucatan. And this video of the aftermath in Cozumel. Streets flooded, cars submerged. In the Cancun tourist zone, mostly empty resorts becoming a safe haven for the locals. Lots of people sheltering in large entertainment halls. No reports of any damage. Now the storm's back over warm water and strengthening as it heads toward the Gulf Coast. You see the path there. Most likely Louisiana, but hurricanes tend to chart their own courses sometimes. Landfall is expected in a couple of days. Meteorologist Bill Caron's tracking the movement. Bill, how's it looking?
Shepard, for the people of Louisiana, especially Lake Charles, I mean, what's going through their minds? This is the fifth storm that they've been in this season alone. And the poor people of Lake Charles, I saw an aerial photo of someone that was flying over Lake Charles, blue tarps everywhere still from Hurricane Laura. I'd say maybe 10 to 20% of people still have tarps on their roofs, and they may be dealing with a Category 2 hurricane in 2 days from now. So let me catch you up with the latest and what the concerns with this storm are, because every hurricane's unique. So right now, it's a Category 1. It was a Category 4 yesterday at this time. It lost a little bit of its punch, then went over the Yucatan. Now it's trying to fire back up. Hurricane Center thinks it could become a major Category 3 hurricane again in the next 36 hours. And then the 12 hours before landfall, it may weaken slightly. So what does that mean for the landfall in Louisiana? They are saying about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, we're going to have 105-mile-per-hour winds, Category 2. Notice that cone of uncertainty goes from Morgan City over towards the Beaumont-Port Arthur area. Sound familiar? If it takes the center line, that landfall would only be 15 to 20 miles away from where Hurricane Laura, a major hurricane, made landfall about a month ago. I mean, that's never happened in our country's history before, that we've had two major hurricanes make landfall in almost the same exact spot. And then it's going to just be a big rainstorm as we head through the weekend. So, Shepard, of course, we got hurricane watches, even New Orleans under a tropical storm watch, and all of our computer models in agreement. This storm is heading to Louisiana with a landfall early Friday evening.
All right, Bill, thanks. So Louisiana again. In this one season, this will be the sixth tropical system to target there. First, in early June, Tropical Storm Cristobal. And then, late August, Tropical Storm Marco. Right after that, the monster Hurricane Laura. That was a Cat 4. Then mid-September, Hurricane Sally turned east, but Louisiana got effects. Late September, Tropical Storm Beta. And now in October, it's Hurricane Delta. John Bel Edwards now, he's the governor of Louisiana. This governor, this is unreal. Are you ready?
Well, the state of Louisiana is full of tough and resilient, faithful people. And I will say that we're as prepared as we can be. By the way, the forecast that you all just got from Bill is exactly right. That's what the Weather Service has been telling us to prepare for. The folks in Lake Charles, I will tell you, I am praying that the storm doesn't go there.
Yes, we all are.
Churches that goes to the east, they're just not positioned well right now for another storm there. But I will tell you, we have a lot of people working extremely hard. The one thing that's a saving grace, perhaps, Shepard, the forward movement speed, I should say, 17 miles per hour. And so that should get the storm in and out of the area.
I hope so, Governor. You know, our viewers are looking at our video from Lake Charles. We've been following a number of people there for the last month, including one hero who took an elderly patient she was caring for on a 15-day journey all over the place, bed and breakfast and motels and stuff. Just heroes in the catastrophes. But you talk about them not being able to take it. I don't know if they can take anything there. It still looks like the storm happened yesterday.
And actually, there's been a tremendous amount of improvement. But you're right. The destruction was so extensive, so devastating. Tens of thousands of homes damaged to different degrees. But 10,000 or so that were absolutely destroyed. The electricity has only recently been restored for many people. And we don't have the redundant transmission lines into that area. And so any power outage now will be longer to restore than would ordinarily be the case. We're worried about the debris becoming projectiles, and if you have strong hurricane force winds, and we have still have 6,000, more than 6,000 people from Southwest Louisiana who are sheltering in hotel rooms because of COVID-19. We're doing non-congregant sheltering, primarily in the New Orleans area. And just today, about an hour ago, Calcasieu Parish, where Lake Charles is, called for another mandatory evacuation. But we're working hard to do the best we can by our people here. We did get a pre-landfall emergency disaster declaration request into the president. He called me this afternoon, and the president indicated he would be signing that request. So that allows us to put these victims who have to evacuate into hotels and other non-congregant shelters as well.
Yeah, there's that letter. Governor John Bel Edwards, we are pulling for your people in every single way. Maybe some miracle will happen and it turns the other direction, but I know people will be out to help if it doesn't. Governor Edwards, all the best, and thank you. Tonight, George Floyd's killer is out of prison. The ex-cop, Derek Chauvin, released on $1 million bond. You'll remember video during an arrest back in May showed the now fired Minneapolis police officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. George Floyd begged for his life, gasping, "I can't breathe." His death sparked protests that spread all around the world. The former officer charged with second-degree murder and some other counts. He's not yet entered a plea, but he is out on bond. No word on where he is, but he can't work in security, can't have a gun, and has to show up for all his court dates. A judge is set to rule next week on where he'll face trial. A horrible construction collapse in Houston. Three workers killed, their remains buried in the rubble for 2 days, but this morning, crews finally recovered them. The 15-story building partially collapsed on Monday. Workers there say a stairwell caved in, debris falling everywhere, all the way to the ground floor. Firefighters and engineers spent yesterday shoring up parts of it, making sure it wouldn't collapse again. As for those workers, their names not yet released, but fire officials say they notified the families and the cause is under investigation. 27 days until the election, and some of our enemies around the world have picked their favorite candidates. America's top spy hunter says Russia's on Team Trump, while China is pulling for Joe Biden and Iran likely for chaos. Intelligence agencies say they're trying to interfere, but the top spy hunter in America says we can shut it down. Richard Engel talks to him next. And an unwelcome visitor to a neighborhood in Chile. Would you look at this slithering thing? It's an elephant seal that got escorted out to sea, and you'll meet him as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 90 seconds.
No secret here, Russia, China, and Iran are trying to interfere in the vote. U.S. intelligence has been warning for months, even years, and now there's evidence that it is happening. But are they succeeding? Are our adversaries influencing us as voters? Are they winning? NBC News chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel got a sit down with America's top spy hunter, and he has your answer in no uncertain terms.
Is Russia putting out disinformation to help get President Trump elected? And is China actively engaging in a disinformation campaign to help Vice President Biden?
Yeah, they all are. And I would throw Iran in there as well. And I would say we have to open the aperture a little bit, Richard, about what we consider disinformation and influence, right? So when you talk about geopolitically, Vladimir Putin, at the end of the day, wants our country to eat itself. He wants mass chaos here in the U.S., as does China, but not from economic perspective. So we see both of them, I would say, exacerbating and amplifying social discord on both sides of the aisle.
You said Vladimir Putin wants chaos in the United States, turmoil. Just go outside. Did he win? Did he get what he wants?
Yeah, so as a counterintelligence official, I'll tell you, we're not helping him. And I think every time he sees chaos and dysfunction in the United States, whether it be right versus the left, Antifa versus the white supremacist, he loves that kind of chaos. And I think we right now are helping him facilitate getting him to smile every day. And I think we have, as a nation, have to look at this as a whole society defense against Vladimir Putin and say the most important thing we could do this November and currently now is vote. It shows Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and the Ayatollah that we make a determination who our elected officials are, period.
Richard Engel's here now. We got to vote. Got it. But is our government able to shut down the foreign influence, Richard?
They are, according to Bill Avenina, on the electoral level, technically. They can protect the voting stations, the actual ballot. He says that one thing that makes the U.S. quite resilient is that voting is so decentralized. In many countries that I've covered, there is a central election committee and just one place where all the votes are tabulated. In the U.S., it's by states, by district, and he thinks that that side of it is pretty locked down. He's not saying that no votes could get altered, but he doesn't think that they could be altered on scale. And he keeps using that caveat. He doesn't think it could be affected on scale.
Yeah.
But the hacking of the voters' minds is much much more subtle. And that's what he's worried about, that in this climate where people don't necessarily accept the truth or know what to believe, they can be easily manipulated, easily riled up, easily confused, not just about how they should vote, but where they should vote, how they should cast their ballots, particularly if they're voting by mail or absentee. So he does see opportunities in the unrest to cause confusion or change people's minds.
Right, right. It's the chaos and the uncertainty that these foreign state actors want. And they're able to foment it.
Some of them want uncertainty, but he made it sound like they have preferred candidates, that Russia would prefer to have President Trump stay in power. China would prefer to see Biden, and Iran clearly would prefer to see Biden because there was a nuclear deal under the Obama administration that has been torn up. Mm. So they do seem to have specific preferences beyond just general unrest and discomfort for society.
Love the inside look, Richard. Richard Engel live in London tonight. Thanks so much. How corrupt are sports? A huge investigation as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
Germany, the beautiful game tarnished? Authorities investigating the country's soccer federation on suspicion of tax evasion. Around 200 officers raiding the organization's headquarters and private homes of some of its members. The prosecutor says the German soccer federation avoided paying taxes of about $5.5 million. Switzerland, the ozone hole getting bigger and deeper. That's what researchers warn at the United Nations in Geneva. As you can see in this graphic, the ozone started rapidly expanding in mid-August, peaking in this month at more than 9 million square miles. Huge change from last year, when scientists said the ozone hole was the smallest on record. Chile, you don't see this every day. An elephant seal romping down a residential street. These neighbors banded together with a long plastic sheet, guiding the animal down the block and back to the sea. Australia, a superhero joining forces with the devil. After 3,000 years, Tasmanian devils return to mainland Australia. The Marvel actor Chris Hemsworth helping release these feisty animals in a wildlife sanctuary north of Sydney. Scientists say they hope they can balance the ecosystem ravaged by invasive species. And now they're roaming the news on this trip round the world in 80 seconds.
COVID now and some shocking statistics amid this pandemic. Online screenings for depression in America are up more than 700%. Find out why and what's being done to treat our mental health. And why one man has flown more than 70,000 miles during the pandemic, and it's all about yogurt? Hang on. is the worst, right? Like, end already. It's too much. The stats show for some people it truly is. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, the number of adults experiencing depression has tripled in the U.S. since the pandemic began. Making matters worse, as millions and millions of people lose their jobs, they're losing their health insurance, too. CNBC's Contessa Brewer on America's growing mental health crisis.
This way, okay? One, two, three.
The pandemic hits hard. Even or especially at home.
I'm actually out on medical leave partly because of my anxiety level. It's hard. It's very hard to teach and be home with my kids.
Matt and Caitlin Grandy are teachers with two small children struggling with the pressure of jobs, remote learning, and their own physical and mental health.
I actually suffer from anxiety in general, so this added layer is particularly intense.
The statistics are staggering. Online screenings for anxiety up 540%, for depression up more than 700% since the pandemic began. One in three Americans report anxiety. One in four young adults have considered suicide or self-harm.
The pandemic itself is traumatic for everyone, and that's individual trauma, but also a sense of collective trauma, even if someone hasn't been directly affected by contracting COVID.
It's hit some demographics particularly hard. Death rates among middle-aged men without a college degree are climbing. Minorities are disproportionately affected by coronavirus and unemployment, and of course, racial injustice.
Everyone's overwhelmed, exhausted, that we're realizing that this is going to be with us for quite some time.
But we have more tools than ever. Telehealth appointments or virtual therapy, often covered by insurance, free online resources, and mental health apps. For the Grandy family, it's simple breathing exercises and daily walks in the forest.
I've learned after 6 or 7 months now how to kind of regulate my body and my mind.
Experts told me that election anxiety isn't making any of this any better. All the talk of potential violence and chaos in the streets. Furthermore, the political divide is dividing families. It's creating chasms in that much-needed family support just when we need it most, Shep.
Oh, Contessa Brewer, COVID affecting us in so many ways. Just ask the NFL. Yesterday, we reported the good news for the Tennessee Titans after the team had two consecutive days with no positive tests so they could reopen their facilities today, but today's no good. Two more players tested positive for COVID-19, so the Titans' facilities stay closed. Their game for Sunday at home against the Bills may not happen. Then there's New England, a third Patriots player also positive. The Pats canceling practice and shutting down their operations. And then there's Florida. The governor, Ron DeSantis, gave the Miami Dolphins the clearance to host a game at full capacity, which would mean 65,000 Dolphins packed like sardines inside Hard Rock Stadium. Honestly, that's something that rarely happened before the virus, but still, the fish won't let it happen this time, despite the governor. the owners decided to limit fans to 13,000. While most of us were doing and going nowhere, much, at least most of the time back during the lockdown, there's this one guy from Florida who shifted into overdrive and flew more than 70,000 miles by plane for the jug of yogurt made of oats. Here's CNBC's Rahel Solomon.
So far this year during the COVID, I've flown more than 70,000 miles.
While COVID-19 was spreading like wildfire, Mika Maninen embarked on an insane travel schedule.
I've visited five different countries, and I've been more than 17 cities in the U.S.
And in those cities, he's rented 25 cars and checked into even more hotel rooms.
I've stayed more than 170 nights in a hotel.
On the road and in the skies, he follows a meticulous protocol to stay safe from the deadly virus.
When I get to the airport, I put multiple layers of gloves on. As soon as I step into the airplane, I wipe every single surface I think I'll be touching. The seatbelt, the tray, even the neck rest. With my rental car, steering wheel, all the knobs, the door handles, everything, and the neck rest once again, because I do lean my head against that.
There's even a detailed plan for the hotel room.
The door handles, the do not disturb sign, the key card, every surface in a bathroom.
So why is Maninen crisscrossing the country in the middle of a pandemic? Well, the short answer is yogurt.
I'm the CEO and co-founder of Helsa Foods. We make organic oat milk yogurt.
The executive says the pandemic sent shockwaves through the grocery store supply chain, putting his fledgling yogurt line at risk of losing its spot on store shelves.
If I didn't hustle, we would not have business today.
The CEO needed grocers to know his team was ready, willing, and able to get their yogurt into stores. And rather than make his employees hit the road, he geared up and took on all the travel himself.
I think that employees are really appreciative about the fact that they don't have to go out.
The yogurt exec has managed to stay healthy and says being a road warrior has paid off. Since the start of the pandemic in March, he signed on 200 new retailers, but the journey hasn't been easy.
So during the COVID, I've spent only 11 days at home. I obviously miss my wife terribly, but you know, it's the price you pay.
For the news, I'm Rahel Solomon.
And we spoke to Mika in Bloomington, Indiana, and he says he's expanding the Midwest with 100 new stores. And in case you're wondering, he says he's still COVID negative. Meteors over the sky in Mexico and dinosaurs on the auction block at Christie's. We told you about this last night. Said if you want to own this dinosaur, you'd likely need like probably $8 million. Wrong, Smith. So wrong. A meteor lighting up the sky over Mexico happened last night near the southern tip of Texas, crashed to the ground, set fire to the bushes and trees. Witnesses found rocks the size of large gumballs, scooped them up and took them away for study. Twitter and Insta weighed in, of course. Some said it was part of an annual meteor shower, while others blamed the aliens or Elon Musk. And now a follow-up to a story we reported here last night. Look here. This is Stan, a 67-million-year-old T-Rex fossil, selling at auction last night at Christie's. And like I said yesterday, he was up for auction. Likely winner would shell out about $8 million. Yeah. Stan went for almost $32 million. He's one of only 50 T-Rex fossils ever discovered and one of the most complete ever. He'll head to his new home now, wherever that is. The new owner is keeping it a secret. 40 seconds till we're done, and here are the headlines. Hurricane Delta weakening to a Category 1 storm, but forecasters expect it to strengthen again and slam into Louisiana as a major storm. The storm expected to make history as the 10th named to ever hit land in the United States during one hurricane season. Sign of hope for desperately needed coronavirus relief. Speaker Pelosi says she and the Treasury Secretary talked again tonight about trying to figure something out. And we're about an hour away from the vice presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Vice President Pence. You can see it on NBC. And now you know the news. I'm Shepard Smith. See you tomorrow. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.